I would like to amend that motion. Am I allowed to amend the motion? It's not been seconded.
There's not been a second?
No, it has not been seconded.
Then the motion dies for lack of a second.
Okay. All right. Can I make a motion now?
You can.
Okay. I would like to see Diane Bell in seat 5, and I'd like to see Jared Kessler as an alternate seat 1, which he currently sits. We're losing a battle here. Restate yours.
I'd like to restate my motion. I'd like to make a motion to appoint the following to Pontiac Culture Services Historic Preservation and Tree Advisory Board. Director seat number 5, Ms. Diane Bell.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Hearing none, the motion unanimously passes. Are there any other motions? Seeing none, this agenda item is closed. Thank you very much for your applications, your participation, and your willingness to serve. Thank you. We are going to now look to the appointments to the Essential Services Advisory Board.
All right, Stephanie will present that one as well.
I'm sorry?
Stephanie will present that one as well.
Okay, thank you.
The terms for regular seat 5, held by Ms. Margaret Valerian, and alternate seat 2, held by Mr. Jim Suster on the Essential Services Advisory Board, will expire on December 31st, 2024. Ms. Valerian is interested in continuing her service to the town, and she meets the attendance requirements as set forth by Resolution 2013-02. Ms. Karen Ree has applied for the alternate seat 1, law enforcement, and Mr. Steve Wolf has applied for seat 5, public relations, outreach, or human resources. All applicants have met the eligibility requirements. An application for reappointment has not been received from Mr. Suster, and alternate seats for seat 2, fire rescue EMS, seat 3, engineering, and seat 4, CPA financial, are vacant. Some of the applicants are in attendance today, should you have any questions.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. Let's start with regular seat 5. That is public relations, outreach, or human resources. And then we can move to the other available seat. Now, I know Ms. Valerian and Mr. Wolf both have placed applications. And is Margot Valerian here? Is she here today? See, I do believe she's working. She has been our vice chair for several years, so we've met her already. Mr. Wolf, I know that you're here. Would you be kind enough to come up and speak with us?
Good afternoon, Mayor, Council, and all my neighbors. I'm Steve Wolf. I reside at 91 Calumet Avenue. Relatively new resident here, but not new to Ponce Inlet. I'm a Nebraska native. And was raised there, but I feel like I grew up here. If I've ever grown up, it was here. And I spent my 20s in this area, and I was inseparable from Ponce Inlet. So a bit of a dream come true to be here with you this afternoon and to be your neighbors, and certainly to offer my skills and my experience to help serve this wonderful community. As far as my professional background, I have over 40 years of the very things that this position entails. I've been a federal official as far as a public affairs chief and things like that. I've owned my own consulting firm. I have, as far as the span of my work, that work as far as communications and strategic communications, public involvement, was uniquely focused on environmental policy, civil works, critical infrastructure issues, civil works, and I've also done a lot of consulting work with fire and police and things like that. So really I've spent an entire career in public service doing the very things that I would love to do to help support this wonderful community.
Well, we're so appreciative of your application, and because when I saw that, I said this is somebody who we'd be very happy, you know, to give us your time and your efforts and everything. So thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Anyone in the public have any questions? Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Wolf. I don't know if you had, you said you had the opportunity. You did sit in on the Essential Board meeting you have.
Yes.
And this is something you'd like to do, so.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've tracked, you know, when I couldn't attend meetings, I got the meeting minutes and watched the, you know, the recordings of the meeting. So I'm trying to make sure I'm up to speed if I'm fortunate enough to be able to serve.
Well, thank you so very much. If there's no questions from anyone, are there any motions that we can make? No. What we're doing is only seat five, and that would be seat five and the alternate seat five. So, yeah.
You and me.
Yeah, I'll do it. I can do it.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion to appoint the following to the Central Services Advisory Board. Regular seat number five, Public Relations, Outreach, or Human Resources, Ms. Margaret Margot Valerian. Alternate seat number five, Public Relations, Outreach, Human Resources, Mr. Stephen Wolf.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, we have a unanimous decision. Mr. Wolf, thank you so very much. We look forward to having you on the board with us. And I think it's been shared with you that the alternate, we hope and expect you to participate fully in the discussions. It's just you would not vote unless the person sitting in the seat, Margot Valerian, is absent. So thank you so much. Thank you. Now we will move to the seat one, the alternate law enforcement. Stephanie? Thank you.
Henry has applied for this seat.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Karen, are you there? Would you like to, there you are. Would you like to come up and say a few words to us?
Good afternoon, Madam Mayor, Town Council, co-residents, and staff. I really,
address.
I had nothing,
address.
Oh, Karen Reeve, 49 Marie Drive.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. I really didn't have anything prepared until I listened, and to quote Stacey Bell, it's a new adventure for me. Fair warning, I am opinionated, but I have been raised with respect, and in fact, I'm still being instilled with that respect, if anyone knows my mother.
Mm-hmm.
So I am looking forward to volunteering for the town in a different capacity and helping out in any way that I can.
Thank you so much. It was really very enjoyable reading your application and your qualifications, and thank you for being on the, you know, the code board when you were as well. So we look forward to continued service to the community. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions of Karen? Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion. I'd like to make a motion to appoint the following to Essential Services Advisory Board. Alternate seat number one, law enforcement, Ms. Karen Ree.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. We have a unanimous decision, Karen. Thank you so much, and we look forward to having you as part of the Essential Services Board.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you. And we are up to 8C, appointment to the Planning Board. Mike?
All right. Ms. Turbano will present this item.
Now it is.
Yeah.
Thank you. All have submitted applications for reappointment, and the town has now received an application from Ms. Vanderbeek, who is interested in serving on the board in the capacity of an alternate seat. She has met all council's requirement and is eligible. Some of the applicants are here tonight, so if you should have any questions, they're here to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kim. Are any of the applicants in the audience? And if so, would you like to come up and speak?
Mayor, council members, Soraya Vanderbeek, 58, Jennifer Circle. I've lived here since 1979. I basically grew up here. I spent the last 10 years working overseas for the Department of Defense Education School System, but I'm very happy to be home. This is my home. And I volunteer around town at the Lighthouse and other places, and I'm just started attending in the town council meetings this year regularly, and I've really enjoyed getting to know everybody and learning the town developments. And I look forward to have the opportunity to serve on a board and to give back to the community that has given so much to me over the years.
Well, thank you so much. Does anyone have any questions? Does anyone in the audience have any questions? Thank you so much. Thank you. Are there any other applicants here? No? Okay.
I'd like to ask a question.
You have a question. Go ahead.
Is it Soraya?
Yes.
Soraya, I'm sorry. Could you come back up just for a minute? Do you know John Cannon? Okay. Gentleman served on the board for years and years and years and years. And the one thing that I always remember him saying is, my job is to back check the employees of Ponce Inlet to make sure anything they present to us is consistent with the comprehensive plan and the land use and development code. That's the whole package. And the job basically is to say is if they feel the person has made a mistake, present that mistake, let it be corrected, and then come back and vote yes. And that's, Joe, if I'm saying it wrong, correct me. Because the Planning Board and the Central Services Board, the Cultural Services Board have been around for years. But we also used to have a Board of Adjustments back in the late 90s and all the way to the 2000s. The board decided that they weren't going to follow their mission. And what ended up happening, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong in this, the planning board lost the ability to do anything concerning the land use and development code because they were making decisions that were completely against what the code stood for. And they were doing their opinions, not the law. And that's the thing that I'm always concerned because I'm concerned about making sure we have the people that understand the importance of that board, just like the Essential Services and Cultural Service. But the Board of Adjustments was closed down also back in like 2010 or 11, and they combined the two boards. Back then, the boards were seven people long, plus two alternates. So we had 18 people applying for basically nine positions. And the person that was the chairperson of the Board of Adjustments for 13 years made second alternate, didn't even make one of the positions on the board. And it was devastating. About a year later, she was in the chair of the board because of so many resignations, realizing the importance of the planning board. So I would welcome you, and I open hands for being willing to serve on this board.
Thank you.
I had to get that in because anybody that goes has got to be a really dedicated person because it's so much that the comprehensive plan and the LUDC. You can't do the comprehensive plan without the LUDC. And that's important.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm willing to learn. So.
Thank you. And we are actually so happy that, and I'm so appreciative that we had more applicants than we had positions available. And it's wonderful to have the opportunity to bring our residents into this process. So if there are no other questions, no other comments, I'll entertain a motion.
Mayor, would you like me to? I'll make a motion. Would you like me to go by the seats and the alternates at the same time or separate?
You can make an individual motion or a group motion as
acceptable. I'll make a group motion if that's okay. I'd like to make a motion to appoint the following to the Ponce Senate Planning Board as follows: regular seat number 3, Mr. Michael Revac; regular seat number 4, Mr. John Joe Cannon; alternate seat number 1, Mr. Joseph Young; alternate seat number 2, Ms. Soraya Vanderbeek.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
You do have a question?
That's it. That's it.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion unanimously passes. Thank you, everyone, for the applications. Thank you, and I look forward to working with those of you who have been selected, and I'm most appreciative of your time. We are now at 8D, a request for co-sponsorship of the 13th Annual Historic North Turn Legends Beach Parade. Mike?
Yes, Ms. Alex will present this.
I'm not used to looking up at the microphone. Jackie Alex, Cultural Services Manager. This is a request for co-sponsorship for the 13th Annual Historic North Turn Legends Beach Parade, hosted by the Racing's North Turn Restaurant. This request includes parking on town property, waiver of special event application fees, and waiver of all staff personnel fees. There are three changes to this year's event to bring to the attention of the town council. A change in the parade route, additional parking provided for event attendees, and event operations that will require additional personnel. Volusia County's beach restoration project will still be underway in February 2025, which will make the usual parade route on the beach unavailable. Attachment 2 in my report provides the alternate route recommended by county and town staff, which keeps the route along the Atlantic Avenue and turns around within Lighthouse Point Park. In previous years, the parade utilizes 210 off-beach parking spaces for event attendees and 135 spaces for trailer parking. This year, an approximate 160 additional spaces can be provided for both privately owned and town-owned lots included in my report. Pursuant to Section 51-8A and Resolution 2023-07, the Historic North Turn Legends Beach Parade does meet the criteria for full event co-sponsorship. However, based on the findings of the town's Special Event Review Committee, event operations will require additional personnel. Since Council's last review of this co-sponsorship request in 2021, the cost incurred by the town increased by $2,528.50, bringing the total cost to $3,689.50. However, the chart in my report for total costs incurred by the town for this event have been updated since that 2021 review to accurately reflect the town's fee schedule. Those changes include the increase to personnel costs, specifying when a supervisor is required for an event, and outlining the differentiating rates between a supervisor and an officer. So that's why you see the big change in the difference since 2021. For this event, the only change to personnel was requiring one additional police and an additional hour for police presence. Staff have evaluated this request, and the currently adopted criteria have been met. I'm available for any questions, as well as the applicants from the North Turn Restaurant.
Thank you so much, Jackie. And yes, I do see our applicant in the audience. Does a council member, anyone, have any questions?
I have one question. And again, this came up whenever Chairman Brower from Volusia County wanted to open up the beaches for parking, and we volunteered to help find some more additional parking because that seemed to be the big issue on his plate. And again, the council at the county agreed to that for us to allow us to find additional parking. They applauded that we did come back with a solution to his potential problem. So my question is, with the change of it coming off the beach, are we still going to utilize that? Which, you know, again, my commitment was to help you with Bobby Blake at, you know, beside Jerry's, and also with Jim and Melissa Taylor behind 7-Eleven. Will we still be utilizing that as parking? Is that
so? Okay. We certainly can. It would be up to the event applicant if they want to add it to the shuttle service, which they have expressed that they'd be willing to work out.
Well, I think the good thing is, and one of the questions that the county proposed to me, Troy Kent, Troy asked, he said, how close would that be? Now, it's in 75 yards. So, I mean, and with the way the parade has changed, not being on the beach, they'll be right there. So, you know, I'm just reminding you that I'll be more than happy to help get those, because I did get verbal commitments from both individuals on that property that we could utilize for parking. So,
excellent. Thank you. And thank you again, Skip, for presenting that at the County Council. That was very helpful all around.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. Okay. Bill or Gary, any questions? Any questions?
Well, just a comment that I've participated in every one of these since the beginning, and it's become an expected annual event here.
Sure.
And it celebrates the racing on the beach, and it would be a tragedy not to maintain it and continue on.
Thank you, Gary. Does anyone in the audience have any questions of the applicant or of Jackie? Okay. Then seeing none, we will entertain a motion.
Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. I make a motion to approve the co-sponsorship of the 13th Annual Historic and North Turn Legends Parade, including parking on town property, waiver of special application fees of $235, and waiver of all staff personnel fees of $3,454.50.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion unanimously passes.
Mayor, if I could add just one little tidbit to this. Just so everyone's aware, when we talk about absorbing costs, that means in a traditional event, the applicant would pay for this time. What this is being asked is that the town essentially absorb the costs, and I just wanted to remind the council that that is covered in the police department's budget. So they budget for a certain amount of overtime. That's where that would come from.
Thank you so much, Mike. Thank you. We are at the new 8E. Discussion of cell tower lease proposal from Crown Castle option. Yeah, Crown Castle. Mike?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, the town has been approached by Crown Castle to renew the existing lease on the cell tower. This lease that we're currently under was initiated in the year 2000 when the tower was built, and it has a series of automatic five-year extensions up until this coming year. The lease will expire on August 22nd of next year. So the Crown Castle has been very interested in renewing this lease. And so I believe it was actually last year we began periodic discussions with them, just kind of touching base and see where this was going to go. So Crown Castle, in through the course of those discussions, has come up with a proposal which is attached in your report. These are just the basic terms. We wanted to present these terms to the council to see if you're okay with this, and if so, there will be a new agreement that is in the hands of their council that they're working on, which will then be presented back to the town council for approval. So in a nutshell, these terms include increased rent. Right now, it started out back in the year 2000. They were paying the town $15,000 per year with an increase of 11.5% every 5 years. They have offered to increase this right off the bat to $36,000 per year and for the first 5 years, and then increasing by 15% every 5 years. And so I've outlined what that would look like in the chart there on your table, which shows for the first 5 years, $36,000. By the time you get to the end of it, they're paying almost $63,000 to the town every year, and that would be starting in the year 2045 through the year 2050. If you add that up over the total of 25 years, that's over $1.2 million that would be paid to the town in rent for this. We also discussed, just for the sake of argument, you know, what would happen if we wanted to just get it all up front? You know, what would that involve? And their offer to us was, if that was going to be done for the 25-year term, that would be $473,000 they'd be willing to give us right off the bat. If it was going to be for a perpetual easement, like, you know, forever, essentially, they would give us $615,000. In addition to all of that, we discussed the need to find some sort of alternatives for our pickleball players, because we have seen and experienced that when that court closes, we hear about it. And this was especially true last year when every carrier on that tower was installing the new 5G technology. And so there were a lot of court closures and a lot of complaints. One way we thought to deal with that was first either build a new pickleball court somewhere else in town, or install some sort of protective cover over that north court, which is the one that they always have to close when the tower is being worked on. And so Crown Castle asked us for a price, you know, or a quote, what that would be. We found out that would be approximately $180,000, and they said, okay. So that essentially would be a signing bonus that the town would get within 60 days after the agreement is approved to do whatever the town wants to do with it. So that's our idea would be to build a protective court because there's not a whole lot of room to build other pickleball courts in town. We researched designs for a metal structure with metal roof that would protect anyone playing underneath it from anything that might happen to fall during that time. In addition to that, we had requested advance notification, so we can notify our players in advance, and that would be 7 days in advance. If they're going to come, any of their contractors, subcontractors are coming to operate on that tower, do maintenance, whatever, we get notice in advance. We can put that on our court reservation system so that everyone's aware ahead of time. And then finally, they have offered also to give us space on that tower if we want to put our own equipment on there, which we can definitely use for communicating between town buildings to other town, other agencies, especially during emergencies. That would be really helpful to us. And then finally, screening. You can get this vegetative. It's faux vegetative. It looks like vegetation from a distance, but they would kind of weave that into the chain link fencing to disguise that a little bit. So they're happy to do that as well. So we have Julie Weston from Crown Castle. She's here, and I'll be happy to answer any questions as well.
Thank you, Mike. Does anyone on council have any questions? Ed, Skip.
And again, just a few. And again, I know, Michael, you're still working on moving forward, but with the terms, 2025 through 2050, I'm sure there'll be some kind of opt-out clause for themselves.
The agreement as it's structured now provides notice for that. It's a 6 months notice. The way it is now, if the town were to exit out of that agreement, we have to provide 6 months notice, and then they would continue to pay rent through that period. If they want to do that, the terms that we're looking at would be to also provide 6 months notice, or if not, then 6 months rent.
Gosh. So the 180 would not be affected by an opt-out clause. Okay.
No, that is upfront within 60 days.
I'm just trying to make sure. And then the last question, I know that this has been a hot button for Harbor Village, and they had discussed that other cell towers are decorated like pine trees or something like that. Is that possible for them to take a look at?
It is possible. From my understanding, though, they would have to basically install a new tower to do that.
Gotcha. That's fine.
That's beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I think that they're kind of silly looking myself, but you have a 180 foot tall pine tree where the rest of them are maybe 60 feet. You're not fooling anybody.
I had to ask. Thank you.
Thank you, Skip. Bill?
No, ma'am.
Gary?
No, I agree with Michael that we've seen those. No, I've been very involved in this negotiation because my previous neighbor used to own towers, and he was a free consultant during this whole thing. Yeah. So it's been very well worked out.
And I'd like to address and have us just acknowledge the fact we are being offered a buyout as opposed to over time, and my preference would be to pay over time. It's a great deal of money. It's a revenue stream over time, and things happen over time too. So that would just be my preference. Gary, do you have an opinion on that, the buyout as opposed to revenue over time?
No, I think if we get a lot of money in one time, I would prefer it over time for
good.
A long time.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes.
That's
absolutely
good. Okay. Good. Are there any questions of anyone in the audience? Anyone have anything you'd like to ask or say? Okay. So you're looking for direction, Mike?
Yeah. Just if you have any changes to these terms, any additional suggestions. Again, Ms. Weston is here to answer any questions that you have.
Well, I think that I know it's been negotiated. I know it's been worked on. A contract will come back to us for our review with these terms. I have nothing further to suggest. Does anyone else?
I'm good.
No,
then
looks
you,
good.
It looks good. You could move forward with this. And Gary, thank you for your work on this as well.
Do you need a motion, Mike, or just the consensus?
Consensus is fine.
Okay.
Hey, you have a consensus. You got it.
Great. Thank you.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Weston, for your time and coming
yes,
here today.
Thank you very much for your time, for being here. Yes. Okay. We do not have any public hearings or quasi-judicial matters. There are, under item 10, Ordinance 2024-04, second reading. Cliff, would you please read by title only?
Yes, Mayor, Ordinance 2024-04, read by title only, an ordinance of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, amending various sections of Chapter 2, Administration, Article 8 of the Town's Code of Ordinances regarding purchasing, providing for codification, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you, Cliff. Mike?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Yeah, this ordinance was first brought to the Town Council at the Council's direction back in August of this year. We're here at second reading now. We just have not had a chance to get this back to you until today. But the Council's approval at first reading was to increase the purchasing thresholds under the condition that if there's any capital expenses that impact a future budget year, regardless, then that would still have to come back to council. So that language has been added to the ordinance, you see highlighted in yellow in multiple sections throughout. We put that in again at the condition of the council's approval. So other than that, the ordinance is unchanged, and I'm here to answer any questions for you.
Anyone have any additional questions? No. Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, a motion, please.
Go ahead.
Your turn. Second reading.
Yes, dear. Mm-hmm. If you hadn't told me that, I probably would have forgotten. You know that. I make a motion to recommend approval of Ordinance 2024-04 as amended, revising purchasing regulations. Am I reading the right one?
Yes.
Yes.
Various sections of Chapter 2, Administration, Article 8 of the Code, Town's Code of Ordinance on second reading.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0. All
right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
10B, Ordinance 2024-09 on second reading, prohibiting the non-medical personal use of marijuana on public property within the Town of Ponce Inlet. Cliff, could you read by title only, please?
Yes, Mayor, Ordinance number 2024-09, read by title only, an ordinance of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, amending Chapter 42, Offenses and Miscellaneous Provisions, relating to the regulation of non-medical personal consumption of marijuana, providing a purpose and definitions, prohibiting the smoking and vaping of cannabis, marijuana, or hemp products on public property, providing for codification, severability, conflicts, and an effective date.
Thank you, Cliff. Mike?
Yes, thank you. This is second reading. The ordinance is unchanged, but we have Chief Glazer here to answer any questions that you might have.
Does anyone have any questions on the second reading? Anyone in the audience? Seeing none. Oh, no. Mark. Seeing none.
It's the holidays. It's the holidays. Okay, I'll make
we'll
a motion.
We'll entertain a motion.
I'd like to make a motion second to recommend reading. Approval of the proposed ordinance 2024-09, prohibiting the non-medical personal use of marijuana on public property within a town in the town of Ponce Inlet on second reading.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you, everyone. 11A. This is first reading of Ordinance 2024-10, repealing the ordinance relating to the prohibition of aggressive solicitation within our town. Cliff, by title only, please.
Ordinance number 2024-10, read by title only, an ordinance of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, repealing Section 50-1 and Section 50-2 of the Town of Town Code of Ordinances relating to the prohibition of aggressive solicitation within the town of Ponce Inlet, providing for severability, conflicts, and an effective date.
Thank you, Cliff. Mike?
Yes, thank you. This is the ordinance that embodies the discussion that occurred last month at this council meeting, repealing this action or this these certain regulations. This is at the recommendation of our town attorney, and so this will be first reading of that. Again, Chief Glazier's here to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. I think we all remember the presentation by Chief Glazier at the council meeting. Does anyone have any questions of Chief or Cliff or anyone? No.
No.
Anyone in the public? Seeing none, motion?
I make a motion of approval for the proposed ordinance 2024-10, repealing Section 50-1 and Section 50-2 of the Town Code of Ordinance relating to prohibition of aggressive solicitation within the town of Ponce Inlet on first reading.
Second.
Motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Mayor Peretzky?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. 11B, Resolution 2024-21, amending town rates for sewer service and sewer development fees. Cliff, could you read by title only, please?
Resolution 2024-21, a resolution of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, amending rates in Appendix A of the Town Code of Ordinances, Part 11, Sewer Service, and Part 12, Development Fee Schedule for Water and Sewer Service, providing for codification, providing for conflicting resolutions, providing for severability, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you, Cliff. Mike?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, as the council is aware, the city of Port Orange is the agency that actually owns and operates the sewer system within the town of Ponce Inlet. The town has an agreement with the city of Port Orange for this service. As part of that agreement, the town is required to collect sewer service fees from its residents, and then we pass them along to the city of Port Orange. So the town is essentially a collection agency for this. That's all we do. Or billing agency, I guess you could say. So yeah, the town does not make any money off of this. We are just required by this agreement since we are a customer. Ultimately, the town government has to pay the city government of Port Orange a monthly sewer bill. And so this is simply when by this agreement, when Port Orange raises its rates, we have to raise them as well since we are the ones that collect from the town property owners. So that's what this is. Port Orange raised its rates back in June. They have done, similar to what the town did for its water rate study, they did a sewer rate study last year, and that recommended a series of increases over a certain number of years to account for inflation and growth and other things. So they are raising, they instead of doing them all at once, they're choosing to do it incrementally over time. So they raised them last year, they're raising them again this year, and we are compelled by this agreement to pass that along to customers. So we have a bill that we have to pay, like I said, to the city every year, and this is part of the budget that was approved. This was anticipated. So that bill, just so you know, comes to about $1,118,700 in sewer fees. That's an increased total in the total amount by about $45,700. So that's the citywide bill for the entire year. If the town council did not pass this increase, we would still owe this bill to the city of Port Orange. You know, that money would just have to come from somewhere else. So that's really the situation that we're in right now.
Thank you, Mike. Does anyone have any questions?
Nope.
No. Anyone in the audience have any questions? Seeing none, I'll take a motion.
I make a motion to approve the resolution 2024-21 as presented.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Mayor Peretzky?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. 11C, Resolution 2024-22, electing not to grant ad valorem tax exemptions to certain properties under the Live Local Act for affordable housing. Cliff, could you read it by title only, please?
Yes, Mayor. Resolution number 2024-22, 2024-22, read by title only, a resolution of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, declaring a contingent determination pursuant to Section 196.1978-3O, Florida statutes, based on the 2024 Schimberg Center for Housing Studies annual report, electing not to grant ad valorem tax exemptions to certain properties under the Live Local Act, subject to said determination providing for the preservation of existing exemptions, establishing a contingent effective date, and providing for a severability and expiration.
Thank you. Mike?
All right, Mr. Lear will present this item.
Good afternoon, Council. This year, House Bill 7073 was passed amending the Live Local Act, which was passed in 2023. And this bill grants taxing authorities, which the town of Ponce Inlet is one, the option to opt out of offering property tax exception for housing developments within their jurisdiction that fall within the 80 to 120% of the area median income. The opt-out provision is available if there's a surplus of moderately affordable housing units identified in the Schimberg Center for Housing Studies annual report for the state. The 2023 Schimberg report identified Volusia and Flagler counties as combined into a single region. The report identified a deficiency of fewer than 400 units for those affordable housing. Schimberger agreed to separate Volusia into its own region in the 2024 report, and that just came out like last week. The updated report from Schimberg showed Volusia County, without Flagler County, having a surplus of 1,917 units. For existing improved properties, the Live Local Act affects properties built within the last 5 years, and the property appraiser's office has also confirmed that no property owners within the town have applied for the Live Local or Live Local Act process. The tax exemption would no longer apply to projects that would be affordable to people who earn 80 to 120% of the area median income. So for that, a single person that is 80 to 120% range is an income of $46,400 to $69,600 in a maximum rent of $1,864 for a one-bedroom unit. And for example, two affordable housing projects were approved last year for the Live Local Act exemption in the county, one in DeBary, one in Daytona. Some of the early data and projected revenue loss to all taxing authorities of approximately $230,000 for the DeBary project and $200,000 for the Daytona Beach project. The resolution to opt out of the tax exemption only applies for 1 year, and the local government must approve a resolution and send the resolution to the appraiser prior to January 1st of each year. So we're required a two-thirds vote of the council members present tonight, or today, and to approve the resolution, and this provision is required to be adopted by January 1st, 2025. And with that, staff recommends approval.
Thank you so much. Does anyone have any questions?
Just a comment. The article was actually in the newspaper today.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
It was, and if I can share with everyone, every now and again, we have a concrete example of advocacy with the Volusia County, the Florida League of Cities, or the Volusia League of Cities, and all the managers. Mike had a hand in this as well. What happened was this Schimberg report, it had data that was put together that was not accurate, and it needed to be separated, as you said. But it was Carmen Risamundo, who is the manager of DeBary, who really led the charge and brought it to the Volusia League's advocacy committee to see if we could get behind putting a little pressure on Schimberg, because they weren't doing it. But eventually it happened, and it happened, and I know that, Mike, you were on all those calls and you contributed. It's just one of those things where advocacy actually worked to help get the data where it belongs. So thank you, and I'm glad we're getting this in. I think that the county is deciding today.
There's a lot of government scrambling to get this done.
It's happening all over right now. So thank you so much. Does anyone in the audience have any questions about what this is or any question about the resolution?
Mayor, okay. I might be able to just add just a little. Add just a little bit. Just for the folks in the audience, this is an act that came about last year to address a statewide shortage of affordable housing. The change that Mr. Lear spoke about that occurred this year's session, was for this tax exemption. So what it says is if it's determined that an area does not have enough affordable housing, you have to essentially offer this tax exemption as an incentive for people to develop housing. The problem with that, there's two problems. The problem is this 80 to 120 percentage of the median income. Based on the calculations we have, that's market rate apartments. And so we're essentially incentivizing what? You know, people to build more apartments that they would build anyway. The other problem with it is the Schimburg Center doesn't release its report. And I think Darren is actually this week. Wasn't it earlier this week?
It may have been earlier or late last week.
So that's why you see the resolution written this way is kind of contingent upon, we didn't think we were going to get it, you know, because the report last year, the 23 report, didn't come out until January of this year. So we weren't even sure we were going to get it. That was the pressure that the mayor had mentioned is really compelling them, like, you need to give us this information. But that's the way the law is written. It's based on this report that you may get, you know, within the last couple of weeks of the year, but you have to pass this resolution by January 1st. So we were kind of under a little bit of crunch, but thankfully, actually, with Mr. Rosamunda's his staff, they were able to provide all of the governments and local governments in Volusia County with this template resolution to use. So I think that worked out very well. And we're going to have to do this again next year. This is an annual thing, you know, as far as the way the law is written currently.
Thank you, everyone. If there are no questions, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 2024-22, electing not to grant ad valorem tax exemption to certain properties on the Live Local Act for affordable housing.
Second.
Motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Council, and happy holidays.
You as well. Thank you. We are at new business, and the new 13A is a discussion, Mike, the overview of the annual municipal budget process.
Okay, where's Mr. Field?
I know. This is wonderful what you
this
did.
This was his suggestion.
I know. It's wonderful, Mike, what you did. But please, okay. Still.
Thank you. Yes, I'm going to go ahead and present it, even though he's not here. all right, so, I'm joking. But, the question was to ensure a better understanding of the municipal budget process. How does the town create its budget? And really, the answer is it's guided by state law, just as it is for all local governments in the state of Florida. There's a certain calendar, which is, Stephanie, you could go ahead and put this up. it never stops. Could you zoom in? You don't have to show the whole thing. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so we know in the way that it is set up, we have two things going on at the same time that are both dictated by law, and that's our budget cycle and our audit cycle, and they kind of overlap. But as soon as you finish with 1 year, you start auditing that past year. And so I'll just kind of go through this here from the top. So the fiscal year is dictated by law, starts on October 1st of each year and runs through September 30th. That's when we start the audit of the last year. And just so people know, this is on an annual cycle. You know, part of the question that came up from Mr. Field was he's coming from a corporate world where you're looking at things on a quarterly basis. And, you know, if you're short of money, well, you just make more widgets or whatever it is. Local governments don't work that way. We provide a service. We get our money in mostly one lump sum. That comes in December. We only get to set our tax rate once a year. And so that's why it's on this annual cycle. Providing a service is not like providing widgets. You know, we measure that not in terms of profit. We're not here to make a profit. But in terms of the level of service that we provide to the community, and how much we can get done. You know, and so that's a very different than, you know, trying to counting, you know, profit and loss, that sort of thing. We have one pot of money that we get, and we cannot spend more than that pot of money. That's it. The only way we have to have a balanced budget with revenues and expenses. The only way you can spend more is with the approval of this council, and that's by dipping into reserves, you know, savings. So let's go ahead and continue with this. We're about to begin our next round of budget, our cycle, which starts in January. That's when we have our budget team, which consists of me, our finance director, assistant finance director, chief scales, and our HR director. We sit down with our other staff, our department heads, office managers, to run through the budget process and expectations for the year. We also have our first board meetings. That's the Essential Services Board and Cultural Services Board meet to go over budget recommendations. We present to the ESAB our initial ideas from police, fire, public works, and these are the big ticket items. You know, it's not like how many gallons of gas we're going to buy or anything like that, but, you know, we need new equipment that's going to cost a lot of money, or, you know, things that are worth their time considering beyond the day-to-day. Cultural Services Board also entertains different ideas. They'll give us things to research. You know, well, what about this? Well, wouldn't it be nice if we had that? That kind of thing. So we'll research the cost, try to get some quotes, and then bring that back to them in the following month. Now, in late January, this is another thing. We don't have all our information at once. We get it in bits and pieces throughout the year. What you see on this slide in blue, that represents information, key information that we get, and then the green, those are public board meetings, or public meetings that the public is welcome to attend. So the property appraiser provides us with a prior final year tax roll. If you could show Exhibit 1, Stephanie. Okay, sorry, we got to scroll up and down with this thing. But so, yeah, this was this year's letter. Scroll down a little bit more, please. This was saying this is the total value of all property in the previous tax year. So they've done all their calculations, everything the way it is wound up with a property appraiser. They come up with this number. And so we can kind of use that as, you know, sort of a very preliminary look at how much money there might be available. Okay, so go back to the first slide, please. Okay. Now, in February, the CSB Cultural Services continues to review ideas. In March, the ESAB has a very specific role that's outlined in code, and that is to make budget recommendations to this town council. And it's at that meeting we have much more, you know, a little bit more certain ideas of what things are going to cost. We've been able to refine it a little bit. And what we do is we give them our recommendations as staff of how to organize those, like in terms of priority. They review that, they ask questions, and then they'll make a motion they'll vote to make a recommendation to this town council. And then we carry that recommendation all the way through the process. That's when we also ask the Cultural Services Board to make its recommendations as well. Now, and again, these are for big ticket items, things that are not part of regular day-to-day operations. Now, in April, that's when the departments send to me all their operation, their projected operations. So that's everything from changes to personnel, overtime, revenue, and additional personnel benefits like pay and benefits, et cetera. And it's also around that same time that our auditor comes back and presents to this council the audit of the previous year. And so I know the council always looks forward to that. But, you know, for people that really want to see, that may have questions about how we do our business, that is it. That is that document. Every transaction, let me explain what goes into an audit. It is our staff and our auditors look through every single transaction that has occurred over the previous fiscal year and make sure that is tied back to the authority to make that transaction, and that is done according to the best practices and procedures, as you know, in the finance world. So we have been very fortunate, and it's through a lot of hard work and diligence, 8 years of perfect audits in the city. That is something that we are extremely proud of and work very hard to do. So anyone that wants to question if we're spending too much or whatever, just look at the audits. It's all right there. Okay, so then we going into May, then that's when I start meeting with the different department heads to review their budgets. They're expensive, and I ask these questions. Is this something you need or you just want? You know, we try to look at it from that standpoint and try to whittle it down. Is this something maybe if we have some extra money left over mid-year, we can pick up, but maybe hold off for now? So let's keep going. Oh, yeah, that's in May when HR, they're starting to receive the annual employee health and insurance benefits from the broker. So it's not like we get this at the beginning of the year. It just doesn't pop in until May. And, of course, we're trying to look and try to negotiate with them to get the best deal for our employees. And then that leads into, I believe it's June, isn't it, Kim, when we do the open enrollment? So that's operating on a state schedule. So the state fiscal year, you know, starts July 1st every year. So we got to get everything ready for that, because then that all ties into the state with our FRS benefits and, you know, everything else. So then we have further meetings with the budget team. So we're working on this point on trying to come pull all this stuff together so we can present it to the council at our preliminary budget meeting in June. It's also in June that the property appraiser provides us with an initial estimate for the next fiscal year. That's called the preliminary tax roll. You want to show that one? Okay, so this is another letter that is by their, this is an estimate, initial estimate of what the values are going to be for the, if you add up all the value of all the property in town, this is what it's going to be. So that's just value, taxable value, new construction, et cetera. All right, so again, this is a little bit more information. This is kind of a, in a nutshell, how this works. I mean, you start with very basic general information, and it gets refined as you go through this process, and that applies to the property appraiser as well. Okay, so back to the table. Okay, I think we were, in June. Yeah, we typically around this time in mid-June or late June, we provide a budget resolution to this council. And that is where, that's the midpoint of the year. So we know if some accounts are, you know, higher or lower than where they should be, we can, if you, if it's within a department or within a fund, those can be transferred amongst themselves to different accounts at the administrative level. If you're going from department to department, if we have to say, well, you know, this department has a little bit extra money, we may need to shift that over here. That has to be approved by the town council in a public hearing. So that's our mid-year budget resolution. That's also late June is when we have our first budget workshop with the council. That's where we as staff say, here are the conditions that we're working with. This is what we think it's going to be. And we need to know from this council, what level of service do you want to provide to the community? And that is a very important because, I mean, these service has a cost to it. And, you know, so, I mean, but that's the direction that we take. It doesn't matter to us as staff. You know, there's any number of things we can do, but there's a cost to it. So if the council wants to have it higher or lower, that's great. I mean, we need to know that. So that's why we ask that question and present a lot of that preliminary information so the public can also see what we're working with. And then it's also late June. That's when we get our information from the Florida Retirement Service. That's the state agency. We have no control over that. They say, this is what it's going to be. And so we have to plug that into our budget. That's the Florida Retirement Service. That's our pension for state employees and city governments that elect to opt into that system. All right, let's scroll down a little bit more. Okay, then July 1st, that is day one. What I mean by day one is there's a schedule in state law called the Truth in Millage, or TRIM. Day one, that's when you have 100 days, all local governments have 100 days to pass a budget, starting on that day. So the clock starts ticking right there. That's when we get our certified final taxable value from the property appraiser. We don't have to do that. It's similar to the other letters. In July, that's when I send, by that time, we have a draft budget prepared. I have my budget memo, it's what, up to 20 pages now, something like that, that I send to the council for that has all the information, everything we know to date. And I send that to you a couple weeks in advance of our July workshop. That's in mid-July, usually a couple days before the town council meeting. And that's when you see the budget document. You see what we have to work with. Everything's itemized in all the different accounts. The memo explains what's in all the accounts. But that's just the draft. That's our first draft, getting it all together in a form where we can actually present it to the public. Then also in July, that is when the council, based on that workshop and any changes, is asked to adopt a proposed millage rate. That is the ceiling. Once the council adopts that, and this is the millage rate that goes out in everyone's tax bill. It can't go any higher than that, but the expectation is it will go lower. And I think, Cliff, you had made a great analogy when we were going through this, is when you buy a suit, it may be a little bit big, but you tailor it over time to get to the right fit.
Right.
So if
you're off the rack, God bless you. But if you're like the rest of us, that's how it goes.
So it starts high, and it certainly got people's attention this year. But that does not intend to scare anybody, but that is a ceiling that is our room to work within as we tailor the budget to the needs of the community as directed by the council and the public. So then, in late July, you'll see staff budget team meets to refine the budget. We get this input, and we start whittling away. You know, what can we do without? What can we postpone? That sort of thing. And this process continues all the way until it's adopted.